Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The big story of the day, without question, is the college basketball level of indictments between agent, apparel, assistant coaches, bribery, fraud. I mean, this is not a little story. This is a gigantic story. It's bigger than, and it's not over yet. All right, let's get to the play-by-play call of the day, the Neil Coulong Day Refson final half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Pitch swung on. There it goes. Deep left center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 50. It's a Judgian blast to deep left center. All rise. Here comes the judge. The rookie leader in home runs for one season in Major League history. It's his 50th home run. Oh, what a year. Aaron Judge.
And a great call by John Sterling on the Yankees radio network as Aaron Judge makes history with his 50th homer of the year and American League rookie record. All right, let's talk about the Steelers now. Let's bring in Neil Coulong. Who was brilliant at analyzing the Steelers, brilliant at technology, you name it.
I was going to say, I just dialed the wrong, somebody's their incorrect phone number. The first time actually dialing a phone, I don't know how long, but I called somebody else. It was totally random. I haven't done that in years. It was like, wow, what do you even do when you call the wrong number? I don't even remember it anymore.
Exactly. You just sheepishly say, sorry.
Right. Yeah, I was basically, nope, wrong place, something like that. It's really dumb. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing very well, Neil. I'm going to start with the game. So there are other issues, but we'll start with the game.
No one else started with the game. Yeah. Might as well.
Might as well. Why do they have this tendency in certain games to sit there and just not play to the level you think they should play to?
There are a lot of different avenues you can take with this, and I think there are, it's really an a la carte kind of thing. You can select several different reasons, and it probably makes some sense, and it's probably a collection of everything. Really, for me, it's just the fact that they don't look comfortable in these early season road games. They look much more confused. Ben looks much more hesitant. The receivers don't seem to, they're not getting open as easily as you think that they probably would, or at least we've seen them in a couple games. You look back at last year when they were just running Kansas City out of the building, and then to go on the road in games against Miami, Baltimore, and Philadelphia and look completely lost. That really kind of defined the early part of the schedule for them last year, and we're kind of still stuck in that pattern. They've been doing this for a while. I mean, I think I've said this on this show before, but 2013 to 2016, the first eight games of the season, they're 15-17. The last eight, they're 25-7. This is really just a team that, for whatever reason, it doesn't really click or gel. Everything doesn't really come together until the weather gets colder. It's later in the season they start to play better. So for me, it really just kind of feels like they feel out who they are. They kind of discover who they are as the season progresses, and they make adjustments to get better. But it's also the same thing that costs them home field advantage in the playoffs. Yeah. In that same span of time, they've played six playoff games. Four of them have been on the road. So they're making it much harder for themselves, to compete for a championship. I mean, it takes a lot to win at Arrowhead and then win at Gillette, and that's something you might have to do again this season if they're able to make the playoffs. And now I'm not even thinking that's like a sure thing anymore. The way that they've played is really flat. It's really disheartening.
Yeah, it's really different. I know the Villanueva thing happened. It's, you know, I've heard Seattle was distracted by what they did. You know, really? You're distracted by a meeting? Really? Okay. I mean, I'm not buying stuff like this. I don't know about you.
They'll push off reasons for distracting that are much more obvious and apparent than that. It seems kind of self-serving in a way, especially with Seattle kind of being one of the front-running teams of this. For them to have played as poorly as they did, I think there was definitely they let their emotions get the better of them. Seattle, that is.
Yeah.
They're known to do that. They're a very emotional team. They,
right.
They live and thrive on that, and that's a very thin line to toe, either positive or negative.
I thought Sherman should have been thrown out.
Yeah, I thought he went a little nuts.
On Mariota, he should have been thrown
out. Yeah, it was a tad much for him. And then to stand toe-to-toe with Taylor Lewan, one of the guys I would not want to stand toe-to-toe with in the NFL, if there are any. I think it affected him. So to that end, I think a team like Seattle, I can buy that. I don't see that with the Steelers, though. I thought it really, for them, it was just execution on the field. The distraction piece of it can be an issue if you allow it to be an issue. I think that maybe to some degree with the amount of, I don't want to call it backpedaling, but a very odd, response after the game and in press conference yesterday, maybe something happened, but I would look at that more after their week 4 game against Baltimore to really determine that the level of distractions. Let's see if all of this is now behind them. It just seemed like everything happened quickly enough. I read reports that the team meeting that they had was 15 minutes, or the player meeting that they had was 15 minutes long, at a time that they don't normally have any kind of scheduled activities. So, it's tough to say that it looked like they were distracted, because for me, bottom line, they looked like that last year, and it wasn't an issue last year.
Yeah,
same game,
right.
Same environment, they looked the same.
There's no difference. But now they're going to play a Baltimore team that had to go overseas, has to come back, and did not exactly turn in a sterling performance.
And what's interesting to me is they're on the plane for all of this. They were the team that was the least effective at all. I don't think many NFL teams want to play a team that just got destroyed, whether it was on the road or at home. Because in the NFL, and we saw this with Chicago, despite what the common Steelers fan is saying right now, Chicago played a good game.
They're
not going to the Super Bowl. They played a solid game. You can't fault them for a lot of what they did. The Steelers didn't make them pay for the mistakes that they made, and they just kept running the ball. Jordan Howard ran the ball very, very well. The Ravens met a buzzsaw, and that tends to happen with them. And oddly enough, it tends to happen against Jacksonville fairly often in comparison to the rest of the league. But they're not the team that we saw the first two games. They're not getting 5 takeaways a game. I don't think they're 44-7 or whatever the final score was against Jacksonville bad either. They're somewhere in between that, but that's a proud team. That's a veteran team. John Harbaugh's been around for long enough. He's going to have their attention this week. So the Steelers that have been dealing with distractions, whether they say that they're not, they're there. They're in for a tough climb, and it's largely because you're going to see a much better Baltimore team than we just saw last week. I saw the line, in fact, just opened up. Steelers are 2.5-point favorites in Baltimore. I don't know if you want free money. I'll take that all day. That's ridiculous.
Have you looked at Flacco much, and if so, what have you thought of him?
He looks kind of the same as he's looked every game since he won a Super Bowl. He's not a very dynamic player. One thing you'll always hear, and I'm sure we'll hear this within 3 to 4 snaps when Baltimore has the ball on Sunday, somebody's going to mention how strong of an arm he is. They don't use him as that. He doesn't throw down the field particularly accurately. I don't think his receivers really help him out a whole lot either. Mike Wallace and Jeremy Maclin are not the most dynamic receivers in the league anymore. He doesn't really have a whole lot of weapons. I really thought a lot of what they were going to do this year is going to be run through Woodhead. And without him, I don't think they have much dimension to their offense. They can't run the ball very well. And now you lost Yonda. That really cripples their offense. He's not, simply put, Joe Flacco isn't good enough to carry that entire offense. And you're going to see them probably try to establish the run, and maybe they can, considering how faulty Pittsburgh looked last week. But if he has to throw the ball 35, 40 times, it's probably not a good situation for the Ravens.
Okay, you mentioned, okay, good enough to carry. Roethlisberger is. Does he need to now?
I think he's been playing like Flacco, to be honest with you, maybe a step up. He hasn't looked good at all. And more than anything, he hasn't looked comfortable. I don't know what exactly it is. He's not able to hit the big plays. They haven't really had any. The stat of the game for me was Antonio Brown, 10 catches for 110 yards. Keeping Antonio Brown at 11 yards per catch when they're targeting him as often as they are is a recipe for defensive success. That's very hard to do. You have to give that the Bears, again, a lot of credit. He had no room to get up the field. He never squared his shoulders. He was pretty much tackled at the catch every time he touched the ball, which was often. Outside of that, Ben doesn't seem comfortable throwing to anybody else. He hasn't played with Martavis Bryant in a year. He's never played with 230-pound Martavis Bryant, which he definitely looks like a much different player than he did. And they don't really have another option. They're trying to get Bell the ball. He's averaging like 3 yards a catch or something right now. Their offense just lacks explosion, and that's what they've been built on. The entire system that they've run is a shorter passing attack that receivers and running backs can get up the field with the ball until they can hit one over the top. They haven't really been able to hit anything deep, and teams, because of that, are bracketing their options. And that suffocates Brown. It doesn't give him the opportunity to make anybody miss. And because of that, they're stalling on a lot of drives. They only ran 56 plays last week against Chicago. I mean, that's amazing to me. They've had games where they're up at 75 for like 3 or 4 consecutive weeks, and we just haven't seen them, really sustain an explosive and dynamic offensive performance for maybe, more than even a series.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much. Good luck with the phone.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. Dave Revson, next half hour. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Wow, very nice on the bump. How about that?
A little peace of mind. Boston?
Well, the suit came in. You gave him a piece of your mind earlier. Do we have to hear it again? Oh, sorry. That's the name of the song. I'm sorry.
Yes. You did that for 5 years.
I just want to say, you let him have it. Wow. That was something else to listen to. And the fact that, Greg Wetzel and Matt Cotrillo were applauding in the background, I thought it was a statement. All right. The big story is... today, the big story changes every hour, I think, in today's climate, doesn't it? But it is dealing with the college basketball coaches and people affiliated with Adidas funneling. They are accused of funneling money to families and recruits and steering them towards schools that wear their apparel. All right, let's get to the Louisville part of it. I've talked about several parts of it. Now let's talk about Louisville. Now, in the document, they are referred to as University 6. Louisville's interim president has confirmed, nope, that's us. Because the way they phrase it, it's a research school with 22,400 students in Kentucky. It's like, okay, it doesn't take much on Wikipedia to figure it out. The allegations against the unnamed school in Kentucky, which is identified as University 6, which is Louisville, includes payments of $100,000 from a sports apparel company, which we've already documented, to the family of an unnamed player identified as Player 10 to ensure him signing with the school. We now have a pretty good idea who player number 10 might be. In a sworn statement from FBI agent John Verderis, he wrote, I have learned that in or around May of 2017, at the request of at least one coach from University 6, Louisville, Dawkins, James Gatto of Adidas, also known as Jim, Merle Code, Manush Sood, and the defendants and others agreed to funnel $100,000 payable in four installments to Company One from Company One to the family of Player 10. Shortly after the agreement with the family of Player 10 was reached in late May or early June, Player 10 publicly committed to University 6. The indictment also says that prior to paying Player 10's family, the defendants first needed to generate a sham purchase order, an invoice ostensibly to justify using Company One funds since they could not lawfully pay the family of Player 10 directly and risk such prohibited payments be revealed. All right, so now let's get to who Player 10 probably is. Brian Bowen, the five-star recruit who signed with Louisville on June 5th. Since 2015, the FBI has been investigating the criminal influence of money on coaches and student-athletes in the NCAA, federal authorities stated. They said the probe has revealed numerous instances in which bribes were paid by athlete advisors, such as financial advisors and associate coaches, to other coaches to exert influence over student-athletes so the athletes could use the services of those paying the bribes. In criminal complaints, investigators say coaches can provide access for student-athletes to sports agents, financial advisors, business managers, and others. You can do that. Moreover, many such coaches have enormous influence over the student-athletes who play for them, in particular with respect to guiding those student-athletes through the process of selecting agents and other advisors when they prepare to leave college and enter the NBA. So what did the investigation reveal? Several instances in which coaches have exercised that influence by steering players and their families to retain particular advisors, not because of the merit of the advisors, but because the coaches were being bribed by the advisors to do so. Court documents state that Gatto, Code, Dawkins, Augustine, and Sud allegedly made bribes to at least three high school players and or their families. One situation involved $100,000 to commit to play at an Adidas-sponsored school. The second involved payments to commit to a certain school and then retain Dawkins' services. The third involved as much as $150,000 to attend an Adidas-sponsored school, sign with Dawkins, and also sign with Adidas. Documents also state that Michelle offered Person $50,000 in bribe payments in exchange for using his official position at University One, obviously Auburn, to steer student athletes to University One's Division One basketball team to then retain the services of the player. According to the document, Evans, Richardson, and Bland all allegedly received benefits from Dawkins and Sud to influence student athletes to use their services. In a statement today, Adidas said it was unaware whether Gatto was allegedly arranging to pay high school players. Today we became aware that federal investigators arrested an Adidas employee. We are learning more about the situation. We're unaware of any misconduct and will fully cooperate with authorities to understand more. So, now this is tough publicity for Adidas because in the apparel world, Adidas, Under Armour, Nike, they've been the big three of late. Person 53, associate head coach at Auburn. Joined the staff in April 2014 with Bruce Pearl. Played in the NBA 13 years, five teams. Evans, Oklahoma State staff last season for Brad Underwood, who's now the head coach at Illinois. He was promoted to associate head coach and recruiting coordinator for the upcoming season. They are in the same tournament Penn State is at the Barclays. Let's see. Oklahoma State says suspended him, but with pay. Richardson joined the staff at Arizona in the spring of 2009. He played collegiately just down the road here at UPJ at Pittsburgh-Johnstown. Bland, associate head coach for the USC staff in 2013-14, played for Syracuse, San Diego State. Let's see. Lynn Swan said, "We're shocked to learn this morning through news reports about the FBI investigation and arrests related to the NCAA basketball programs, including the arrest of USC assistant coach Tony Bland." Lynn went on to say USC Athletics maintains the highest standards in athletic compliance across all our programs and does not tolerate misconduct in any way. We will fully cooperate with the investigation and will assist authorities as needed. And if these investigations are true, we will take needed action. And yes, USC has hired Louis Free. I wasn't joking in the last part. That was serious. Okay, that's true. But This is an ongoing investigation, so it's not over. This has all sorts of wow to it. Dave wraps the next half hour. We're going to talk about the Big Ten football. Well, none of us know enough about this yet to really dive into what this means on the basketball front. As of right now, no Big Ten schools are implicated. As of right now, only one possible Penn State opponent's implicated, because they're in that Barclays tournament. Oklahoma State is with Penn State in November. All right. Bottom of the hour. News is next. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the sports bozo of the day. Well, it's pretty obvious today what it is, because it is every name you can name so far that's been revealed in this FBI investigation. Anytime that the letters FBI happen to be on the start of in the first sentence of your story, that does not lead to good things. All right. It's interesting because we were talking the other day, we brought up the suit, and it was brought up to us that he really is known internally as the billion-dollar talent. Is that true in this station?
Billion-dollar talent? Wow. Yeah. Hmm. No, that title's not on his door yet.
All right, well, let's bring in Dave Revson, who understands what it means to have $1 billion, right? Yeah.
Dollars a billion is, Steve.
Yes, you and I
but
both do.
Beyond that, yes, yes. I'm always amazed when you say to people, it's 1,000 million. Like, do you understand how much that is?
I know.
We think of a million as a lot, and this is 1,000 million.
1,000 million.
But anyway, yeah, yeah.
Big Ten, you watch Penn State and Iowa. Iowa is very, very good. I mean, very good, especially in that environment. What did you think of the two teams when it was all said and done?
Well, obviously, look, you know, you're very fortunate to win if you're Penn State. But as you said, part of that is a function of how good Iowa is. Particularly, I thought they played really well defensively. And you still look at the number of yards that Barkley and Penn State accumulated. I mean, it speaks to how overwhelming Penn State's offense is. But, yeah, I mean, I was impressed with both teams. You knew going in that's a really hard place to win. I mean, three straight top five teams have fallen there. There's a reason for that. So I came away impressed with both teams. I think people who are discounting Iowa to a certain extent in the West do it at their own peril, although obviously their schedule is very challenging, and that was part of it. You know, the crossover games are really tough for them.
Yeah.
And I continue to believe that Penn State's the best team in the Big Ten. But, again, I just think that the league is more competitive than it has been. It continues to get more competitive these last two or three years. I think we've really seen it get to that point, and that's a double-edged sword. I mean, it helps you on one hand because I think the perception of the Big Ten has improved nationally, but it also means that there are a lot of tough games on your schedule. It's not just one or two that you have to worry about.
Now, the odd thing is about Barkley, I mean, on our broadcast, is whether it's a pregame show or postgame show, Jack Ham and I rarely ask James Franklin about him. I've kind of sort of realized that in the postgame. I'm like, maybe we ought to ask him a little bit more about him. Look, you watch all these highlights and so forth. What does he bring to the table that even makes you sit back and go, wow?
Well, Steve, I will never forget. I mean, we've been, as you know, to hundreds of football practices now in our Big Ten tour. And so they do all kind of tend to meld together to a certain extent, right?
Sure, like, right, exactly.
What did we see at, Indiana in 2011? I don't remember. But I will always remember the moment where I was standing on the sidelines a couple of years ago with Howard. We were in the indoor practice facility at Penn State. It was raining outside, and we were kind of standing on the sideline, and they run a pitch play to Barkley, and he turns the corner, and he puts a move on a linebacker and zooms past us on the sideline, and Howard and I turn to each other, and we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
like, that guy is good.
Yes.
And so, that's the one that will always stand out for me, kind of the first time that I saw him. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. He's obviously incredibly strong. His ability to change direction on the dime is remarkable. He's very fast. He's got great hands. He's just kind of the whole package. And he's a great kid, as you know. I mean, that part of it is really refreshing, too, just kind of how nice and how humble he is. And so he is everything. I mean, he is the entire package. I guess that's what stands out about him. It's not that he's a power back. It's not that he's a speed back. It's not that he's a back with, good third down back. He's all of those things, and that's just so unusual that you would see it in one package.
When you look at the Nebraska situation, Sean Eichhorst is out. Mike Riley was able to get through last weekend. How do you view that situation right now?
Well, I view it as tenuous, I think. I hate to say that because I love Mike Riley, and let's let him coach the season.
I agree with you.
All you have to do is look at James Franklin a year ago, right, when Sandy Barber was coming out and giving him a vote of confidence, and how crazy that seems now in hindsight, but it was warranted at that time. I mean, she needed to do that because there was some unrest and there was some grumbling in State College. So let's see how this year plays out for them. I do think they're getting better defensively. We've definitely seen that here in these past couple of weeks. So, we're all rooting for Mike Riley. I mean, anyone who knows Mike Riley's rooting for him because he's such a good guy. But it was a little bit of an out-of-the-box hire, to say the least, by Sean Eichhorst. I mean, this was not a guy with a proven track record at a big-time program. Mm-hmm. He was someone who had kind of been off the beaten path, and he'd been in the NFL. But he hadn't proven that he can compete year in and year out at the level that Nebraska wants you to. Now, part of that is that he hadn't been in a program like Nebraska. I mean, you need a first time to get an opportunity like that. So I'm hopeful that he will figure out a way to turn it around, but I'm concerned because it's obvious that what's been happening isn't good enough for Nebraska's fans. And I guess to a certain extent, nor should it be. Although I look back at that first year and I think if a couple of those games had gone a little bit differently, we'd be singing a very different tune with him.
At Michigan, obviously, Wilton Spate must do certain elements either in practice or in film or whatever that has Jim Harbaugh, who knows quarterbacks, saying, that's my guy. What did you think, though, of John O'Korn's performance when he stepped in against Purdue?
Well, I thought he was much better than Wilton Spate has been to this point this year. Now, Wilton Spate had a pretty good year last season.
He did.
And I think, the issue is they don't have as much talent at receiver as they did last year. And now they've lost, one of their best guys for the season. And so I think that's part of it. I mean, Amara Darbo can make you look really good. Jake Butt can make you look really good. So if you're inexperienced in that position and you're not getting the same kind of play and then you lose Drake Black, that hurts. But O'Korn went in those same circumstances and definitely moved the team better. And I did think looked better. He doesn't look better at practice, I'll tell you that. I mean, Spate looked like the better guy both years that we were there in practice. So, it's just one day. I mean, obviously it's just a snapshot, so who knows what every other practice looks like. But I don't know. I was impressed with Spate last year, and I still think he can be good. But I think they've got some deeper problems on that offense. I mean, they're not as explosive on the flank as they were a year ago. They're certainly not as good at tight end, although they are talented there. The line lost some really good players. So there are some issues, and I just think, again, I'm not saying that, you know, you're blaming it on the quarterback, but I do think it's easy to blame it on the quarterback, and sometimes it's deeper than that. And all that being said, O'Korn looked better, clearly, on Saturday than Spade has.
Well, part of the question is he grew up 35 miles from here. So he grew up in Huntington, just south of State College. So that's why I wanted to ask about him.
Right.
And the Purdue story, we'll see how it plays out. But how interesting is it to see them suddenly get competitive with a lot of people?
I think it's great. I mean, it was amazing to be on campus, Steve, on Saturday. We did our tailgate pregame show from there, and the buzz on the campus. I mean, they just haven't been that excited about football really since the Big Ten Network started, right? And we're on our 11th year, and I can't remember any kind of excitement that even comes close to that, any kind of buzz that comes close to that for Purdue football. And, you know, Purdue had a pretty nice run in there with Joe Tiller. I mean, it was a good, competitive Big Ten program. A team went to the Rose Bowl, had an all-time great quarterback in Drew Brees. And they do have a decent football tradition, you know, certainly with the Cradle quarterbacks and a lot of the really good players who have come through there. And they want to be good. They want to embrace it. I mean, is it a basketball school? Probably more than football. But they have a rich football history. And so, I mean, he's really good. You know, Jeff Brohm is a great X and O coach. I think that's become apparent. But, you know, at a certain point, talent takes over, and that's what happened in the second half against Michigan. Is, you know, Don Brown's a great X and O coach, too. Yeah. So, you know, you're matching wits with a guy who is a master, and he's got better chess pieces than you do in the chess match. So, but I'm enthused. I mean, we need more competitive programs, particularly in the Big Ten West and teams that can make some noise.
Well, one of the teams in the Big Ten East is more competitive, it seems, is Indiana. That's who Penn State has next. What's been your thought on them so far? Because it's been a little disjointed because of the FIU game being removed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they're a better team. We certainly saw that in the Ohio State game, you know, that they were able to hang with the Buckeyes and lead, you know, deep into the third quarter in that game. You know, Richard Leggo needs to figure it out a little bit. He threw a ton of interceptions last year. We saw some shades of that, some signs of that again in the Virginia game. And then they brought in Peyton Ramsey, and he was great. They don't have quite as good a running attack as they've had. I think to a certain extent what happened this weekend might maybe be fool's gold. I mean, we'll kind of see. But, you know, you're playing a really low-level FBS team. So I'm not putting too much stock into that. I think against their top competition, they've had trouble running the ball. And if you end up in that situation, you know, then it's you're behind the chains quite a bit, and then I think it becomes really difficult for your quarterback. But they're talented. Simi Cobbs is as good a receiver as you're going to see in the Big Ten. I mean, he's in that conversation. He's really good. You know, they've got some talent, no doubt about it, and they've gotten dramatically better on defense. Allen's done a really nice job there.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time, and always appreciate the work.
All right. Right back at you, Steve. Always fun to be on with you, and have a good call this weekend.
Dave, thanks. Appreciate it. Dave Revson on the show. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Penn State, Indiana, Saturday at Beaver Stadium in what is going to be a 3:30 kickoff, 2 o'clock airtime. We're going to have Spider Caldwell and Lou Prado coming up on the show this week to talk about generations of greatness. Spider had a lot of input into the uniforms that you're going to see on Saturday. There's a lot more to it than just that. It's because I mentioned yesterday what they have to do for this, and it's not as simple as, okay, here's some uniforms, go out, have yourself a good time, and go for it. That's not how it works. If you're in the equipment department, you have to go out and have to change out all 125 face masks from blue to gray. You don't change the helmets, you change the face masks. So they've had to change out all the blue ones for gray ones. Next, you have to they get 250 pairs of white shoes, which they have practiced in. And this is not something where they have not practiced in them. They have practiced in the white shoes a couple of times. They'll probably do a few more before it's all said and done to make sure that they've got this whole thing right. So I'm trying to think what the other one was they had to change out. Something else they had to do to make this happen. Oh, they have to put numerical decals on each side of the helmet. That takes time. Then, by the way, when the game's over, they have to change out the gray face mask, put back the blues. They have to change out the they have to take the decals off both sides of the helmet. This is not an easy process that the equipment staff's going through to make this happen. They've also repainted the end zones. Now, the equipment staff didn't have to do that, but the Beaver Stadium staff has repainted the end zones. The old diamonds from back in the 70s and into the early 80s. Right. The old diamond blue and white end zones.
Yeah, your TV broadcast colleague, formerly there in State College, Andrew Calista, had a chance to go out after James's press conference this afternoon and take a little photo. Yeah. Oh, look really cool. Going back in time. That was great.
Yeah, it is going back in time. The key is to win the darn thing. You can get enamored with all the stuff that they're doing and so forth. They got to win. That's what it comes down to. Sometimes you see this stuff, and I know it's great. It'll be fun for the fans and in the whole deal. But Penn State's playing for big stakes every week. So what they wear, great. I mean, the two big things to me on Saturday are how does the game turn out, and the Jack Ham tribute. I mean, that's Jack's road to the Hall of Fame. He could have picked anywhere. He could have picked Bishop McCourt. He could have picked anything to get him to on his road to the Hall of Fame. He picked Penn State. Picked it. And he'll be one of those honored on Saturday. And he's also the honorary captain for the game on Saturday. So it's very, very special. That something like that happens for him, because I think everyone knows that I think the world of the guy, and it's not just every season or every game that he makes me better. It's every single play he makes me better. So I don't think this is any issue, but I bet the crowd gives him the just due. He deserves it, so. He really does. All right, we've talked about the basketball situation with the NCAA, and this has many layers to it, from someone at Adidas to a player to a family to a university. Brian Bowen's the five-star recruit that is alleged to be the one involved in this. Louisville's the university has been confirmed. It's been indirectly named in the document. Four assistant coaches from across the country. Not at Louisville, though. From Auburn to Arizona to Oklahoma State to USC. They were named in the document, but no one from Louisville. Okay? No one. So, yeah, I want to point that out when it comes to the part about player, what's he identified as? Player one, I guess. No, player 10, I apologize. Was reached in late May or early June. Player 10 publicly committed to University 6. Well, that's Bowen as player 10 committing to Louisville. But there's nothing in here that says that, there's no Louisville coach that's been indicted in this. Okay. They said they learned of at least one coach from University 6. Okay. At the request of at least one coach from University 6, Dawkins, James Gatto, Jim Merle Code, Manush Sood, the defendants, and others agreed to funnel $100,000 payable in four installments from Company 1, okay, to the family of Player 10. But it doesn't say who that coach is. Because that coach was not arrested today. Doesn't say, now maybe said coach didn't get any money this. I don't know. But that part's very fuzzy because no one at Louisville was in the initial arrest complaint. But Louisville is directed in this because of Bowen signing with them. This one is far from over. Far from over. You hear about these things, you hear rumors about them. I'll tell you a quick story. I'm not going to name the player or the university. But a guy was coaching, and all of a sudden in August he gets a call from this awesome recruit and says, I'm coming to school for you. He goes, what? I'll be there tomorrow. And he showed up the next day, played 1 year, went to the NBA. Okay. Sometimes there are certain players where you look at them on the roster and say, how did he get here? Not in the natural recruiting area. Right? Kind of an eyebrow raiser, like, okay. Not saying there's anything wrong, but every once in a while you openly ask yourself questions. How did X get to Y? And then you do the game. But yeah, that story about this major big-time recruit years ago who ended up being a one-and-done, went to this school, and he called the coach the day before who had not been recruiting him and said, I'll be there tomorrow. And he said, okay. Quite a business, isn't it? Fun one tomorrow. Rich Scarcell's on the show tomorrow. Kim Jones on the show tomorrow. We got a lot going on.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.